Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Epic Mountain Gear. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Question Mark with Mark Schlereth is brought to you by Brakes Plus.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
Question Mark, alongside of Troy Rank, I am Mark Schlereth. You got a question for me or for Troy, you can hit us up on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Couple great ones coming in. Here's one for you, Troy, and you just mentioned this briefly, but Jake Butt, what does he look like in camp, and is he all that has been advertised? Go Blue. So that unnamed source there, but obviously a Michigan fan. So Jake Butt, what have you seen? And I'll tell you kind of the conversation I have with Elway.
He's as advertised as a pass catcher. I mean, he's got a little shimmy at top of routes. He gets in the pass game. What has surprised me among the tight ends, I think he might be their best blocking tight end.
Right.
And that, I mean, again, I get he was at Michigan and he blocked, but I guess I wasn't seeing him through that prism. To me, he's been their best blocking tight end, which is an incredible boost for an offense that you can then keep him on the field in all type of alignments. You're not going to, oh, here comes Jake Butt. He's in to catch. So that's what I've seen, Mark. What have you seen from him early in camp?
Well, same thing. You know, I talked to Elway about him. I talked to him about the just the tight end group in general. And, you know, he was really, he's really encouraged by Jake Butt and his development and where he's at. But he's like, you got to remember, he's a rookie. Like, he didn't get to play last year. He was injured. So, you know, he's going through it. I talked to him about Troy Fumagalli as well. I think they're optimistic, cautiously optimistic. I think the thing that Elway was saying is not only in line, you know, at the end of the line of scrimmage, he can block, he can do all those things for you, but he can split out in the slot, and he can be out wide as well. He's got enough body presence to kind of body people up like a tight end. He's got enough speed, enough quickness to separate in the top of routes. Like you said, he's got a shimmy at the top of the stem. So he's got the ability, he's got the ability to be an effective pass catcher. Again, rookie. You know, it never looks like, Elway and I had this conversation. It was funny because, you know, you start to reminisce about things. I go, you know, it never looks like it looks in the classroom. Like as a young player, you draw it up in the classroom and you get exactly what, you know, what you're going to get. And then the defense lines up somewhere and you're like, whoa, 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 that's not where it was lined up on the card. You know, that's not where we saw it in the classroom. Like that guy's not supposed to be there. Well, guess what? He is there. I heard Kyle Shanahan talking about the fact that you've got to overcome our coaching. Like, you've got to be able to adjust your route. Hey, listen, we're running an out route, right? And if it's like a cover three with a corner that's pressed and bailing, like, you gotta hit that out at 15. Like if it's a cover two corner, guess what? You round that thing off to 17 to create a little depth between where that corner is rolled up and where you need to break off that route. So, you know, we'll coach it and we're going to get this for sure. You know, we're going to get this quarters or we're going to get cover two or we're going to get cover three. And this is what we want you to run. And if they're not in it, guess what? That's on you as a receiver. You've got to overcome the coaching. You've got to basically adjust your route. And so, you know, I mean, Elway and I are talking about how it never ever looks the same. Like you get on a football field and it's always different, man. There's always a different nuance to it, a different lineup, a different position. You know, guys just aren't where they're supposed to be or where you drew them up. You put a card together, you work on it all week, you get out and the card looks nothing like what the defense looks like. So, you know, that's part of the learning curve for a guy like Jake Butt or a guy like Fumagalli. But I think the bottom line is they're pretty excited. They're pretty excited about kind of that position group in general, like the potential of that position group. Now, potential gets you fired. I understand that, but I think they're pretty excited about that. So, you know, I mean, to me, I think that's a great thing. I mean, I think it's a really good thing. Here's one for you. If there's only 7 to 8 legitimate pass rush opportunities, Troy, in a game, why pay pass rushers elite money? Why pay the Von Millers of the world and those guys elite money if there's only, a few opportunities to really get to the quarterback?
Oh, it's similar to closers. There are how many opportunities they're going to get. They don't pitch as many innings as starters. It's a unique skill set. It's the Liam Neeson. They have a unique set of skills, particular set of skills. And it's still a passing league. We're just saying they have 7 to 8 legit because of the fact the ball comes out so quickly. So, you still have to create pressure. Now understand this. When we say sack opportunities, that doesn't mean he can't be a disruptive force.
Correct.
Those are two different things. And Von Miller is as good as anyone in the league in creating pressure. And I know fans, that drives you crazy. Well, I don't see the sack totals. He only had 10 sacks. He was still one of the most disruptive players in the league last year. So, and Von Miller, frankly, he's decent in the run game. Way better than you can imagine. But why would you pay him the big money? Because you still at some point have to get to the quarterback and or disrupt the quarterback and make him uncomfortable.
Right.
And Von Miller is as good as that as anyone in the league.
My answer would be, did you see the Super Bowl? Right? You see the strip sack fumbles? Did you see the touchdown scored on the defensive side? Did you see the defense that led a fairly anemic offense to a world championship? And did you see Von Miller get that Super Bowl MVP trophy? And that's why you pay those guys. Those guys are disruptive forces. And every time you break the huddle, when you have one of those guys on the other side, you know what you have to do? Account for that guy. So now I have to change protection. I have to keep an extra guy in. I can't get all five guys out as receivers. I can't block that guy one-on-one. So now I have to change the integrity of what I'm doing to account for 58. That's why you pay those guys. All right, so I'm going to throw this one. I'm going to throw a question to myself. Can I do that on question mark? I can ask a question to myself. I suppose. I mean, I'm hosting.
It's a bold strategy, Colin.
Right.
Let's see if it pays off.
I'm kind of hosting the show, so and it's something I don't to do. So I'm going to ask a question to myself. This is something that's been asked to me, and the reason I'm doing this, Troy, is it's been asked to me by several different media members over the course of the last few days. And it's really about the fullback position. And do I think they'll keep a fullback? Do I think Jana will make this team? And kind of why two back formations? In a league where a lot of it is 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, why keep a fullback? So let me just answer this by saying, look at the offenses, look at the West Coast offenses in this league. All of them have a fullback. All of them, Kyle Shanahan keeps Kyle Juszczyk, right? In San Francisco, kid that used to be at Baltimore, Juszczyk. Like the teams that run, Atlanta had Patrick DeMarco. I think it's Patrick DeMarco, but DeMarco, the fullback. So you look at these teams, here's why. All right. And you've got to look beyond the numbers. Like I think a lot of people, especially media members, want to look at the numbers and go, well, the guy only gets every 4 weeks, the guy gets three receptions. He averages a reception a week or whatever. Right. And every now and again, he'll have that four catches for 52 yards, and you're like, wow, why can't that be that way every week? Well, I think the big thing that you get into, and the problem that Denver has had in keeping a fullback, is they don't have a tailback, or they haven't had a tailback that's got the versatility to be a threat in the passing game. So the reason you keep a fullback, a tailback, and a tight end, and you go in what used to be base personnel, right? 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end, is because you make a defense declare how they're going to play you. Meaning, if I'm coming out in that what would be considered in today's game more of a heavy personnel, you've got to decide if I'm going to keep multiple linebackers on the field. Am I keeping three linebackers on the football field? Because those three linebackers, odds are, they're not going to match up very well in coverage, right? So if I've got a running back, a tailback, that is really good at catching the ball as well as running the ball. Now I've got a dual threat out there, and I've got a fullback that does it also, that catches the ball well. Guess what we can do? If you decide to match us up with three linebackers, we can spread you in that formation, and we can throw the ball out of that. The issue the last couple of years is as good as C.J. Anderson, as good as his season was last year, and he's a good player. He's not a threat in the passing game. So if I match him up outside to a middle linebacker, you know what? You as a defensive coordinator aren't afraid of that matchup. You're like, my middle linebacker can run with CJ. He can cover him. I'm not afraid of that. Same thing with the tight end position here the last couple of years. You think anybody, anybody's afraid of, what was the kid's name? Victor Green? Like, oh, he's gonna rip us down the seam?
Virgil Green?
Virgil Green. What did I say? Victor?
Yeah.
See, that's how forgettable he was. But nobody's really afraid of that. You know, I'm not bagging on the guy. I'm just saying they weren't afraid of that. And so you don't have to get out of your defense, or you're never in a position where you feel like, uh-oh, we're threatened here. We're vulnerable here. So you keep that because you can dictate as an offense. So Troy, I come out with two backs and a tight end, and you play me in three linebackers. I spread everybody out, and now I've got a linebacker on my fullback, a linebacker on my tailback, you know, potentially a linebacker on a tight end. I feel really good about where I'm sitting right now. Like, I can really take advantage of you. If you play me in nickel and say, hey, we're going to take a linebacker out and we're going to bring a couple of cover linebackers in, and we're in that personnel grouping, now I bring everybody in and I cram it down your throat. I got a lead, like I block back, I gap block, I zone block, whatever it is. And I've got my lead back, my fullback on your nickel, on your basically safety that's trying to play linebacker. And I feel pretty good about my matchup. I wall off one side and it's mano a mano, my fullback on your safety, and we're going to play a little smash mouth football, and my back's going to run off that. I feel pretty good about where I sit right now. So it really becomes dictating personnel groups, and that's why it becomes important. And they haven't had the personnel. The personnel on the field right now, as the Broncos are currently constructed, Troy, is way better than it's been the last 2 years. Would you agree with that? Like,
there's
way
been a,
better.
There's been a talent upgrade, especially at receiver. And I think you'll see it at tight end as well. And the thing about the running back thing is they could have a dynamic threat, even if it's not through one guy. Whether that's Philip Lindsay coming out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. I think that's, frankly, Devontae Booker's best role as a complementary threat as a receiver out of the backfield. D'Angelo Henderson showed some flashes of that last season. That's what they don't have. Like you mentioned, C.J. Anderson ran the ball well, but there was no fear of him as a receiver. When you start placing fear in the defense, or at least forcing them to react, how are we going to cover this running back out of the backfield? The fullback's in. How do we account for that? Mm-hmm. Like, force the defense to be reactionary. It just felt like the last 2 years, Mark, that the Broncos have been reactionary in everything they've done, especially offensively.
I always look at teams that can spread you out in those formations and get fit. And this is, let's face it, this is a matchup league. I mean, think about, we've seen the Patriots in a bunch of different situations, right? We've seen, how many times have you seen Gronkowski, especially in the red zone, split out as the single receiver on the single receiver side, manned up on a corner? Just knowing that, hey man, he's going to get an inside release and he's just going to basically body up the corner. We see it with Jimmy Graham all the time as well. Like, it's such a matchup league. And if I can get a favorable matchup, and all I got to do is run that personnel out there and then see if you, like, see how you react as a defense. Run them out there early. What are you in as a defense? And think about this now. If I get you in a personnel grouping that I love, so let's say you match up nickel in that personnel grouping. Man, I go no huddle and I keep you in it. And I said, now, guess what we're going to do? We used to do this all the time when I played. We're going to play a little smash mouth now, right? We're going to keep you in this group and we're just going to beat you up. And we're not going to let you get out of it because we're going to line up on line of scrimmage and you can't substitute. We're not going to substitute. You can't. You go ahead and substitute. We'll catch you with 12 men on the field or, right? We'll quick snap you when you're trying to substitute and you won't be set defensively. So it gives them something that they haven't had. It gives Bill Musgrave another tool as an offensive coordinator to get work done. And like I said, to get those favorable matchups. And that to me is the beauty So when I hear guys talking about, oh, we need to get rid of the fullback and Jano can't play, and I'm like, no, you don't understand the principles that you're trying to get to, and how we haven't had the group in the backfield. And this is frankly, like, as I'm watching running backs, this is going to be a really interesting, like, how they figure this thing out, because I look at, when I'm just watching drill work, I think the slowest footed guy we have is Booker. Like, the least impressive looking guy in drills is Booker.
Yeah, that's a problem if he's going to be your starter.
Right. So I keep looking at D'Angelo Henderson, really quick footed guy.
Good feet.
You know, I played with Daryl Green for a long time in Washington. Well, 6 years in Washington, played 20 years. He started a cornerback for 20 years. The guy's an absolute freak show. And the game really comes down to hands and feet at every position. Really any sport. You can look at any sport, Troy. You know, you think about, and you talked about earlier, we were talking about Nolan Arenado. And you said, hey, at running the bases, he's not real fast running the bases.
He is not.
He's not a great base runner. But the guy has got, I mean, he's cat level quickness side to side, right? I mean, elite level movement skills, great feet. When you have great feet, same thing with Trevor Story. When you have great feet, man, you can get a ball deep in the hole. You have soft hands. You receive the ball well.
Light on your feet.
Right. You're quick. Think about a catcher. You know, we always talk about, I talk about with my son all the time, guy receives the ball well. Right? He's got really light hands. He can frame pitches. He just has a knack for receiving the ball. You get a catcher, you know, that might as well have a 2x4 strapped to his hand.
Frying pan hands.
Like, that guy can't catch. Like, you've got to have great hands.
Which, quick tangent. Why is Chris Iannetta not in the end of games for Tom Murphy in the ninth inning? How many times do they need to see Murphy not excel late in the game before you just sub him out? Why have three catchers if you're not going to use them?
Right.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, no. I'm 100% with you, because when it comes to receiving the ball,
Tom's a work in progress.
Right, and Chris Iannetta is, there's a reason that the guy has been in the league as long as he's been in the league. He manages it well, and he's got soft hands. But again, back to the conversation, think about basketball. Right? Can you move your feet on defense? Can you play with your hands? If you can do those things, you can play. And the same thing goes for football. And Daryl Green used to say, hands are great. You talk to Champ Bailey. He told Champ Bailey this all the time. Hands are great. You know what's better? Feet. Feet are better.
Because you're in position.
Right.
Feet put you in position.
They put you in position.
And then if you have hands, then you're like the Hall of Famer. You're the All-Pro because you can finish the play. But a lot of defensive backs don't have great hands. They're failed former receivers.
Right.
But they have great feet.
Right.
They get to the spot, and they make up ground.
Right.
I mean, that's where I agree with Green there.
And so what I love, like, take a guy like Darrell Revis, great hands, meaning not catching the ball, but great hands and stabbing you. Like, I always thought of corners like – elite level corners are a lot like elite level left tackles. Guys that can move their feet, shuffle, stay in front of you, have great hands, can stab you, never get off balance. Like, Darrell Revis is the best I've ever seen. It's stabbing you, rerouting you, changing you, stopping you, and then having the feet. Because if you lined him up in a 40, you know, he'd be one of the last corners to finish. I think the same thing of Chris Harris Jr. I'm not saying he's slow, but I'm saying when you talk about elite level speed, he doesn't have elite level corner speed, but he's got elite level feet and hands, and he understands the game, and he can play that way. And when I watch the running backs do their drills, Troy, I'm just like, the slowest footed guy, just the eyeball test to me is Booker. And I don't think that bodes well for him when you're looking at Freeman and you're looking at Lindsey and you're looking at D'Angelo Henderson. Like, that dude's got elite level movement skills. Now, I don't know what kind of back he is. I know they were really excited about him last preseason. Then he fumbled, and then it was like he went on witness relocation. You know, I don't know why exactly that happened. I don't know if he was behind the eight ball and in blitz pickup and if he didn't understand things. I don't know. But just from pure movement skills, if I was picking this team on movement skills, a Jano, in my mind, moves better foot skills, or has better foot skills and moves better than does Booker. Like, if I was just picking the team, Booker wouldn't make it, just on foot skill alone.
Well, I think his experience will save him, but it creates an interesting scenario. There's five backs. One of them's probably not making it. You know, when you look at Booker, you look at Freeman, you look at Philip Lindsay, David Williams. I mean, at some point, you're going to run out of, you know, D'Angelo Henderson. Mm-hmm. One of those guys isn't making it. David Williams has been impressive. I was hoping to see Royce Freeman pop a little more. I haven't seen that yet. So I am really anxious to see what he looks like against the Vikings in that first preseason game, which we're less than a week away from now. It'd be this Saturday night. Out at Broncos Stadium at Mile High, I believe. They put those new logos up on the stadium. I was driving in this morning at the ungodly hour at 5 a.m. But it looks like a polo logo, like on a polo t-shirt, like where you'd put a logo. And it was reappropriated from somewhere else in the stadium. But the stadium now, because it was blank, which really looked odd, but they had the little Bronco heads now. It's almost like the Izod logo on a t-shirt. So that apropos of nothing. But they will play on Saturday. And I'm anxious to see, because the running game, we got to see something. As much as we like Case Keenum so far and the optimism around the receivers, they have to have a functional running game. And this idea they're going to have four backs rotating through, most teams can't pull that off. The Patriots do, but most teams don't pull that off.
Do you know, like, so I've seen them run, like, tight end counter. I've seen them run some gap scheme. I've seen them run some zone scheme. I've seen them run a bunch of different stuff. Do you have any sense, like, what Bill Musgrave wants to run? I mean, I understand right now they're still putting in a scheme, and they're trying to figure out what they do best, if that makes sense, right? Like, what kind of are we? Like, we're creating this offense based on, and I like this, actually. I like the fact that we're going to create an offense that best suits the skill set of our quarterback, right? Whatever our skill set is, we're not going to ask you to do a bunch of stuff that you're incapable of doing. Like, you know, like Case Keenum is not going to rip down, like he's not going to sit on one hash and rip it to the opposite, you know, sideline on a bunch of, on a bunch of 18-yard out routes. Like, that's not what he does. Like, that's not who he is. And we're not going to design an offense to accentuate his weaknesses. We're going to design an offense to accentuate the strengths that is Case Keenum. So
we saw that last year, design an offense around everything we don't do well. Right. We don't protect well. We have no receivers other than one dude. Let's go three wide,
right.
5-7 step drops,
right.
And let it rip.
Exactly.
We've seen that side.
Yeah.
What do you guys don't do well? We're on
it. We want you to run the deep over and the deep out, and we're going to take the 7-step drop that has 2 hitches. All right, now you hold on to the ball, kid.
Hold on, look. I want
and
a couple now, of pump fakes
right,
in there if
you can. A couple pump fakes, right? And then I want you to, one more pump fake, and that thing's going to spit up. It's like burping a baby, right? It's just like, do something that actually our guys can execute. So me saying that, Billy Musgrave understands that. They're putting in an offense where their quarterback can actually, you know, execute what you're asking him to execute. I just don't know that they really know exactly what their feel is in the running game.
What did you see from Minnesota last year? What was their running game that you saw? I mean, every team has zone concepts. I get it. What did you see? Would you label them power, or how would you label their run attack?
I would more of a zone, because they want to run some of the boot keep it. You know, I mean, Pat Shurmur comes from, you know, he comes from that West Coast offense. So it's more of a zone and, you know, fullback cutting off the backside, fullback motioning across, being a lead blocker, but it's more off a zone concept. But there was gap in there. That, I mean, it was kind of an amalgamation of a bunch of things, but it was more, to me, probably more zone than anything else.
And I think we're going to see that, because I believe Jano's a lock for the roster. And the one thing Bill Musgrave hinted at in his presser with us earlier, a few days ago, I've lost track of the days already in camp, he said one of the things he loves about Case Keenum is he can throw the ball from under center, and he's comfortable under center. Because you've told me this. You can't be a great running team if you don't stay under center.
Correct.
Because it cuts off lanes. It cuts off vision of the back.
Right.
It basically narrows narrows what you can do in the run game, right?
Yeah.
So I would expect to see something more of a facsimile of what you saw in Minnesota, where he's under center.
Right.
Because he can throw from under center. And they run a little more, you know, that nuanced version of the zone. But who is that going to be? I think we know what Case can run. The problem, the thing we don't know yet, what do the running backs do well? Booker hasn't done anything particularly well yet on the ground. Maybe this is his camp to show. Freeman, I haven't seen enough. I mean, Lindsey's explosive, but, I mean, he's not really a between-the-tackles guy. Is it D'Angelo Henderson? I don't know. I mean, David Williams, they like. So what does the back do well? And I think that's right. Then we're going to see what the running game looks like, because we don't, frankly, know who the top three backs are right now.
Yeah, and not only that, and I'll explain this when we come back, but it's not just being under center helps the running game. It also is incredibly important when you're talking about play action, and I'll explain why next.
Mark Schlereth here. When you're looking to replace your windows, you want the best. That's why I endorse Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. They sell Infinity from Marvin fiberglass windows. You can't buy Infinity windows from big box stores, so you know they never compromise on quality. Infinity fiberglass windows offer unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and durability. So call my friends at Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, 303-794-0490, or find them online at windowsforyourhome.com. And make sure you tell them Stink sent you.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Matthews Fine Watches and Jewelry. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Welcome back. Schlereth and Evans, Mark Schlereth sitting in Mike Evans' chair, hosting the show. As Mike Evans is out, Troy Rank, Denver 7, Bronco Insider, joins me. By the way, I had no idea. Happy birthday.
Thank you, my man. Yeah. Always an interesting day.
Yes.
Woo! Celebration. Right. This is probably the worst song ever, but okay, cool.
That's Cool in the Gang, man. You can't go wrong with Cool in the Gang.
Yes, you can.
No.
And we're doing
no,
it right now.
No.
I have an identical twin, so I would like to wish my twin brother Tracy happy birthday.
Really? Is he in Colorado?
He lives in Pueblo. Yeah, we were journalists together at CU. He was at the Pueblo Chieftain for years. He works at the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame doing all their publications. He's a writer as well.
Okay, so wait a minute now. Who is the older of the identical twin brothers?
Tracy is older by 12 minutes.
By 12 minutes. Now, I play with identical twins in college, Jim and Jerry Medved. And the funniest thing is, when I first went to school, the only way I could tell them apart was Jimmy had a scar on his chin. And so they'd both be standing there and you'd be kind of eyeballing to try to find the scar. Like if they hadn't, if you weren't clean shaven, you're kind of eyeballing, Jimmy. And then over time, you looked nothing alike. Do you and your brother, do you still get confused for one another or?
We do, and we've had, we enjoyed being twins. Like, it was weird, cause in my high school, and I might be off a number of this, but in my graduating class at Pueblo Centennial, we had like 5 sets of twins and a set of triplets. So being a twin in high school was really not a big deal, but we went to the University of Colorado together, and we could not convince people we were twins. So you'd see someone and, walking around campus, hey, how'd you do on that test? Like, hey, I don't have that class. I don't know this person. Like, they'd get so upset. So you'd finally like, oh, I put C. It was clearly C. And you just play along with it. In high school, we switched classes. In seventh, eighth grade, we'd have a girlfriend and you'd put the phone on. He'd talk because our voices do sound almost identical. So he'd talk on the phone. I'd leave, come back. We enjoyed being twins. But yeah, if you saw us today, there was at a high school, event a few years, it's been several years ago now, but this guy came up to give me their scores. Hey, here's all my kids' scores and their times. I'm like, hey, I'm here freelancing for somebody else. I'm not Tracy's at the Chiefs. He's like, you better take my scores and you take them now. And this guy had gone just irate, crazy. So one of my funnier stories, I was at, when the Rockies were going terribly and I'm covering them, Mike Hampton, I got along with Mike, different cap. I like Mike. My brother showed up there to do a feature story on somebody. He was dressed. He had come from a different event. So he's in a shirt and tie and really dressed up. Well, as a baseball beat writer, you don't dress like that on a daily basis. So they're wearing him out, thinking he's me.
Right.
And he's trying to tell him, like, listen, you might want to, hey, it's not me. And they're like, you thinking you're going to fool us? You're going to, and there he and the Hampton especially going off.
Right.
And I come walking around the corner and Hampton's face just goes pure red. And then he just starts MFing me like it's my fault. I'm a twin. Like, we set him up, I'm like, dude, he tried to tell you.
Right. You just wouldn't listen.
You wouldn't listen.
You know what's funny about Mike Hampton? Because Mike Hampton had the goatee, and Mike Hampton's a little guy, right? Well, I'm playing for the Broncos, and I go to Rockies games, and people would ask me to sign autographs. They thought I was Mike Hampton.
That's Mike Hansen.
Yes, all the time, all the time.
You're a slightly different body type than Mike Hansen.
A little bit different, right?
Because he's like 5'8", number one. Take out the fact that you're much bigger.
Right, 5'8", 180 pounds, right? And I'd be walking, hey, Hampton, sign this for me. I mean, I can't tell you how many times. I'd be like, I'm not Mike Hampton, dude. Like, Mike Hampton's a little dude, right? No, come on, Mike, sign it for me. They get mad. I go, if I was Mike Hampton, and like, they're playing. Like,
yeah,
would I be in the stands getting a hot dog, right? Look how fat I am. I'm not Mike Hampton. And it happened to me all the time. I mean, I can't tell you how many times. I mean, dozens of times I got asked for Mike Hampton autographs.
The only flattering time I got asked for my autograph is at CU. And it wasn't, as there was a kid getting autographs for, with the players, like after a practice, and it would have been like my freshman or sophomore year. And this kid's mom, he was a little kid, she was convinced I was Michael J. Fox from Family Ties.
Oh, I could see that a little bit, you know?
And I'm trying
to. You were younger at the time?
Much younger, much lighter.
A little bit lighter.
A little bit lighter. And this kid's like, you gotta sign the ball. And I'm like, I'm not him, I'll ruin the football. Like,
right.
You don't want my signature. You had like, Michael Westbrook. I mean, like, first round draft.
Right.
Like, I don't want to sign. And the mom's like, you signed that ball. So I signed it like, as Alex P. Keaton or whatever from Family Ties. And she gets the ball back and she's glaring me. And I'm like, I told you I wasn't him.
Right.
I try to help you. Help me help you.
Right, exactly. That's hilarious. Okay, so going in, we were talking about the running game and how it's important to be under center. And what that does, you know, how when you get in the shotgun, you eliminate, you know, let's call it 50% of your runs. You just can't execute them from shotgun, okay? So the other thing that it does for you from a deception standpoint, it really eliminates a lot of the play action or makes some of your play action stuff harder. And one of the reasons is because think about when you're under center, the depth of your linebackers, the heels at about 3.5 yards of the linebacker, okay? So that's where you want to be because you're defending the run. You've got the potential of all those runs, all the zone, all the gap stuff, and you're reading your keys. And so you're at about 3.5 yards. When a quarterback gets in shotgun, linebackers' depth go to about their heels at 5.
To account for coverage, right?
To account for coverage because you're going to throw it 65% of the time and you get deeper drops. So automatically you play from depth to, if they hand it off, it's a delayed, you know, the running back is standing there. The running back isn't coming forward. So when I snap the ball, the running back's coming forward. So the play is quicker. I reverse pivot or I open up, I hand to the running back. He's coming forward. When I'm in shotgun at 5.5 yards, I got to wait for the ball. Then I have to hand it to him. So it's delayed. So you play at the linebacker position. You play with more depth. And you roll up to the line of scrimmage if they end up handing it off. It's a delayed handoff, essentially, right? That's why it eliminates a lot of what you can run. And so when you flag a play action out there, I've already got that depth. If I'm flagging play action from underneath center, your heels are at 3.5. You step up. Now you're at 2 yards. That opens up that underneath passing route, you know, that shallow cross or that hook by the tight end, and you've got a plenty of room to complete that. At 5 yards, even if I step up, I'm still at 4 yards, and it's easier to get my depth in those intermediate routes. So it eliminates that middle of the football field, the play action stuff. It doesn't eliminate it, it just makes it harder to complete. And so these are reasons that being under center is important. You know, I've got so many people tell me, oh, it's the college system. 65% of the plays, you know, are still in shotgun. Yeah, 40% of them or 35% of them aren't. That's math. It's hard, right? 65 plus 35 is 100. Takes me a minute.
Takes you a minute.
I'm with 65 and 40. 65 are out of shotgun. That means 40 yards. Like, who is it? Who is it? The actor that was in, the baseball kid where the kid hurts his arm, then he can throw really hard. And,
Roethlisberger, the rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year, yeah. And is it Daniel Stern?
Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel Stern was a stupid coach. And it was
the pitching coach.
Yeah, the pitching coach. Anyhow, that was a Daniel Stern moment. Anyhow.
But the middle of the field's where the game's going. And that's where Case Keenum's at 130, his passer rating was 130 in the middle of the field.
Sure.
Shouldn't that, based on what you're explaining to me, Mark, and coaching me up here, if they're able to stay under center and run the football effectively, isn't that going to open the middle for Emmanuel? Isn't it going to open it up for Deshaun Hamilton and for Jake Butt?
Absolutely.
Because they've had no threat in the middle of the field the last 2 years.
Right.
Tight end passing game, just non-existent. They don't use their backs out of the backfield. We've talked about this. Jamal Charles was a ghost in uniform.
Right.
I mean, shouldn't that open that up to some of those things we haven't seen for a few years?
Without question. Without question, it should open that up, and it should be a lot better. You know, we've spent a lot of time talking about the offense, talking about the potential of some of the rookie players, some of the first-year players, just about what this offense is going to look like in general. I want to get your opinion on what this defense has looked like early in camp with, you know, Chris Harris Jr. being that number one guy, Bradley Roby coming over, what Bradley Chubb has looked like. So I want to get your opinion. You've been at every practice. What that looks like on the defensive side when we return next. Schlereth and Evans, Mark Schlereth, Troy Rank joining me from Denver 7, Bronco Insider. I can't even remember what I teased, Troy. I teased some. Oh, defense. That's
defense.
Right. We've been talking so much about the offense. I want to get your general impression on the defense. And, you know, I mean, there's been so many changes. I saw, Justin Simmons make a nice pick yesterday. I mean, I've seen big time plays. I've seen Von Miller looks like Von Miller. Like, it's not fair when he's rushing, you know, in one-on-ones. It's, I mean, he's from a different planet. I'm convinced he's just a, you know, it's just a different make. I got to talk to Shane Ray. He's doing really well. His wrist is, you know, holding up well. And he looks the part of a first rounder. He's making plays. What are your impressions of what we have on defense without Aqib Talib, you know, and some of the changes they've made?
Well, I think they're going to play a little more zone. They're going to be a little more creative in their coverages. They're not going to be more press coverage as much. I mean, when you lose Talib, it is going to change things. He was a unique mm-hmm. talent. And so with Bradley Roby and Chris Harris paired opposite each other, you're going to see some subtle differences. And Chris Harris alluded to it yesterday, Mark. He's moving around more. He's not just in the slot. They have versatility with Justin Simmons. Justin Simmons could even come down in coverage.
Yeah.
He played corner in that Dolphins game.
Yes, he did.
Frankly, played pretty well. So that gives him versatility. Darian Stewart believes he's poised for a rebound. He missed T.J. Ward last year.
Mm-hmm.
He was out of position in coverage more than he had been as a Bronco, and I think he's healthier. So I like the base group, but nickel corner is a concern for me. Isaac Yiadom has passed up Brendan Langley. Yiadom's a rookie. Langley's a second-year guy. Langley's part of that last year's draft class, or, you know, the 16 class, that's 17 class, right, that's still really struggling to find its way. But if I'm watching this, if Tremaine Brock doesn't get back soon, I would say in the next few days.
Now, he's got the hammy. He's been out, and I saw him jogging and running on the sideline yesterday.
He's closer. He's okay. Making progress. But they need to see him because, frankly, and I agree with Vance, he had him in San Francisco. He's a good corner, but he didn't really play last year.
Yeah.
And now he's hurt this year. If I don't see something from him soon, I may put in a call to Kayvon Webster to bring in, to get some depth, because they're thin at nickel right now. I mean, I like Yiadom, and I appreciate the progress he's making, but, I mean, is that your nickel?
Right.
I mean, so I would have his, Kayvon Webster on speed dial. I, you know from sources in Kayvon's situation, he's getting interest from like five teams right now, and he may not be able to wait until the Broncos decide if Brock's going to be okay. But they're secondary, to answer your question. They're going to be a little more creative in coverage. They're not going to see as much press and, you know, that man as we saw in years past. And like anything, you just talked about it, play to the strengths. And the strength of this personnel is a little different now that Talib's gone.
What about Bradley Chubb? We've made so much. You know, it's funny because I guess the narrative of camp has been how impressive Courtland Sutton has been. Like, if you just went down kind of camp storylines, it'd be Case Keenum as advertised, maybe better than advertised. He solidified that position. You don't have to worry about it anymore. Paxton Lynch still doesn't, you know, still hasn't shown that he can get it on a consistent basis. And then when it comes to the rookie class, you know, so much was made of Bradley Chubb being the fifth overall. How's it dropped to us? The guy's a great player. All those things are true. But really, when you think about what people have talked about, has been the suddenness and the incredible athleticism of Courtland Sutton. So where is Bradley Chubb? How has he played so far? What have you heard from the Broncos coaches and the different people that you've talked to, you know, as you're doing your job with Channel 7?
Well, he's even better against the run than they expected. He can line up in a 4-point stance. He has the build at 6'5"-ish, 270, to be a legitimate run stopper inside. They're going to have to find creative ways to use him. And they are, because they're using the NASCAR package. It's not four on the field. It's four on the floor, if you will, with Shane Ray, Barrett. You have Von Miller in there with Chubb. But Chubb is a pass rusher. We haven't seen that moment yet. I'm anxious to see it in the games. It's not – someone asked me on Twitter the other day, are you concerned that Chubb, you know, is kind of not standing out? I'm not. I'm really not, because I see the athleticism. I see the work ethic. I see the willingness to learn. And I want to see him against another team, frankly, and see what it looks like over the preseason. And we forget these guys. They're rookies. They take time.
Right.
I see all the things that suggest he'll be fine. But, you know, it might take the first month of the season until he finds his way. You know, just because he physically looks the part doesn't mean he's going to be a dominant player from jump. But the benefit he has, Mark, a healthy Shane Ray allows you to bring Chubb along at the pace you want to.
Right.
They're not going to ask him to be, go out there and get a sack a game. They don't need that from him. Just be a productive player and grow into the role. And that's what I see him doing this season.
I think the other thing that you have to understand, they're playing him right now in multiple roles.
Right.
And I think
It's a lot.
But also they're going to be limited opportunities when you're playing in multiple roles. So they're getting him ready to do a lot of different things, but it's really hard to make that flash, pass rush play when you're dropping in coverage. I've never seen a guy dropping in coverage in the flat that does a great job of pass rushing at the same time, right? Cause he's in the flat, you know, he can't do both. And so there are a lot of those opportunities. I talked to him yesterday coming off the field and just caught up with him. You know, and you got to understand at North Carolina State, he was, at NC State, he was his freshman year. He was an outside linebacker. So when I talked to him about that, it's not what they're asking him to do is not completely new to him. He's done it before in the past. And then if you go back to last year's film, they were specifically lining him up all over the football field to take advantage of his athleticism, to also exploit a weak link on the opponent's offense, but to try to hide him. Because every time the offense broke the huddle, they found him and said, okay, where's number nine and how are we going to block him? And so they were moving him all over the field, which I think is a benefit. I think it's a benefit to the Broncos because he's done multiple things. So they're just keeping in that multiple role. Like, hey, we can move you down inside at an outside, like at a five technique, defensive end slash defensive tackle on a three technique, and we could put Shane Ray outside of you. Or we could have you rushing from the outside. Or we can have Shane Ray rushing as a defensive end and you playing an outside linebacker in the flat. Like, there's so many different roles that we can give you. And in doing those multiple roles, it's going to be, I think, harder to flash early in camp. It'll be interesting to see if come preseason they say, okay, now you know what we're going to do? We're going to line you up on the defensive end in a nickel situation, let you rush this passer. Go get him.
And see what that looks like.
Outside linebacker, right? So I think there's a lot of fluidity in what they're trying to accomplish. And I think what they're – like, if they just wanted to line him up and let him rush the passer, I think you'd see more flash plays. But that's not what they're doing with him right now. They're giving him – this kind of depth of defense so that you can play multiple positions. And when we get in, we'll be more game plan specific with you.
It's interesting you say that, because with Sutton, they keep running that fade to him and they can't cover it.
Right.
So we just see him every day. Hey, stop me if you've heard this before. He just got another touchdown.
Right.
And you're right. And that's an insightful way to say it. With Chubb, they're not just saying, okay, against the twos, go line up against that struggling right tackle and get him sacks, because you could game the system to make him look like he's unstoppable if you just put him at twos. So you're right. That's why I am curious, aren't you, what it looks like in the game when he just goes and rushes the passer.
Yeah, when they just say, hey, you're lining up with the outside backer in nickel, so you're really playing kind of a defensive end slash backer, and go get this opponent's quarterback. That's when I think you'll see him flash. Hey, man, Troy, great. We'll be at camp again tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that. It's been great to have you. Happy birthday, my friend. Happy birthday.
It's been a great day already. Three hours with Stink.
Yeah, and wish your twin brother, Tracy, a happy birthday as well. That's it for us, for Schlereth and Evans. We appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Do it all over again at 6 o'clock in the morning. But right now, we've got Pritch and Cecil coming at you next.